Chapter 12. Uneasiness. Its whole style differed materially from that of Legrand. What could he be dreaming of? What new crotchet possessed his excitable brain? What usiness of the highest importance could he possibly have to transact? Jupiter's account of him boded no good. I dreaded lest the continued pressure of misfortune had, at length, fairly unsettled the reason of my friend. Without a moment's hesitation, therefore, I prepared to accompany the Negro. Upon reaching the wharf, I noticed a scythe and three spades, all apparently new, lying in the bottom of the boat in which we were to embark. "What is the meaning of all this, Jup?" I inquired. "Im scythe, massa, and spade." "Very true, but what are they doing here?" "Im the scythe, and the spade what massa will sis pon my buying for him in the town, and the devil's own lot of money I had to give for him." "But what, in the name of all that is mysterious, is your massa will going to do with scythes and spades?" "It's more than I know, and devil take me, if I don't believe 'tis more than he know too. But it's all come ob do bug." Finding that no satisfaction was to be obtained of Jupiter, whose whole intellect seemed to be absorbed by E-Bug, I now stepped into the boat and made sail. With a fair and strong breeze we soon ran into the little cove to the northward of Fort Moultrie, and a walk of some 2 miles brought us to the hut. It was about 3 in the afternoon when we arrived. Legrand had been awaiting us in eager expectation. He grasped my hand with a nervous empressement which alarmed me, and strengthened the suspicions already entertained. His countenance was pale even to ghastliness, and his deep-set eyes glared with unnatural luster. After some inquiries respecting his health, I asked him, not knowing what better to say, if he had yet obtained the scarabus from Lieutenant G.H. "Yes," he replied, coloring violently, "I got it from him the next morning. Nothing should tempt me to part with that scarabus. Do you know that Jupiter is quite right about it?" "In what way?" I asked, with a sad foreboding at heart. "And supposing it to be a bug of real gold." He said this with an air of profound seriousness, and I felt inexpressibly shocked. "His bug is to make my fortune," he continued, with a triumphant smile, "to reinstate me in my family possessions. Is it any wonder, then, that I prize it? Since fortune has thought fit to bestow it upon me, I have only to use it properly, and I shall arrive at the gold, of which it is the index. Jupiter, bring me that scarabus." "Hat, the bug, massa? I'd rather not go for trouble. That bug you must get him for your own self." Hereupon Legrand arose, with a grave and stately air, and brought me the beetle from a glass case in which it was enclosed. It was a beautiful scarabus, and, at that time, unknown to naturalists, of course a great prize in a scientific point of view. There were 2 round, black spots near one extremity of the back, and a long one near the other. The scales were exceedingly hard and glossy, with all the appearance of burnished gold. The weight of the insect was very remarkable, and, taking all things into consideration, I could hardly blame Jupiter for his opinion respecting it. But what to make of Legrand's concordance with that opinion, I could not, for the life of me, tell. "Sent for you," said he, in a grandiloquent tone, when I had completed my examination of the beetle, "I sent for you, that I might have your counsel and assistance in furthering the views of fate and of the bug." "Why, dear Legrand," I cried, interrupting him, "you are certainly unwell, and had better use some little precautions. You shall go to bed, and I will remain with you a few days, until you get over this." "You are feverish, and feel my pulse," said he. I felt it, and, to say the truth, found not the slightest indication of fever. "But you may be ill, and yet have no fever. Allow me this once to prescribe for you. In the first place, go to bed. In the next, you are mistaken," he interposed. "I am as well as I can expect to be under the excitement which I suffer. If you really wish me well, you will relieve this excitement." "And how is this to be done?" very easily. Jupiter and myself are going upon an expedition into the hills, upon the mainland, and, in this expedition we shall need the aid of some person, in whom we can confide. You are the only one we can trust. Whether we succeed or fail, the excitement which you now perceive in me will be equally allayed. I'm anxious to oblige you in any way, I replied. But do you mean to say that this infernal beetle has any connection with your expedition into the hills? T. has. N. Legrand, I can become a party to no such absurd proceeding. I'm sorry, very sorry, for we shall have to try it by ourselves. Try it by yourselves? The man is surely mad. But stay. How long do you propose to be absent? Probably all night. We shall start immediately, and be back, at all events, by sunrise. N.D. Will you promise me, upon your honor, that when this freak of yours is over, and the bug business, good God, settled to your satisfaction, you will then return home, and follow my advice implicitly, as that of your physician? S. I promise, and now let us be off, for we have no time to lose. With a heavy heart I accompanied my friend. We started about 4 o'clock. Legrand, Jupiter, the dog, and myself. Jupiter had with him the scythe and spades, the whole of which he insisted upon carrying, more through fear, it seemed to me, of trusting either of the implements within reach of his master than from any excess of industry or complaisance. His demeanor was dogged in the extreme, and that deuced bug were the sole words which escaped his lips during the journey. For my own part, I had charge of a couple of dark lanterns, while Legrand contented himself with the scarabus, which he carried attached to the end of a bit of whipcord, twirling it to and fro, with the air of a conjurer, as he went. When I observed this last, plain evidence of my friend's aberration of mind, I could scarcely refrain from tears. I thought it best, however, to humor his fancy, at least for the present, or until I could adopt some more energetic measures with a chance of success. In the meantime I endeavored, but all in vain, to sound him in regard to the object of the expedition. Having succeeded in inducing me to accompany him, he seemed unwilling to hold conversation upon any topic of minor importance, and to all my questions vouchsafed no other reply than "we shall see." We crossed the creek at the head of the island by means of a skiff, and, ascending the high grounds on the shore of the mainland, proceeded in a northwesterly direction, through a tract of country excessively wild and desolate, where no trace of a human footstep was to be seen. Legrand led the way with decision, pausing only for an instant, here and there, to consult what appeared to be certain landmarks of his own contrivance upon a former occasion. In this manner we journeyed for about 2 hours, and the sun was just setting, when we entered a region infinitely more dreary than any yet seen. It was a species of table land, near the summit of an almost inaccessible hill, densely wooded from base to pinnacle, and interspersed with huge cracks, that appeared to lie loosely upon the soil, and in many cases were prevented from precipitating themselves into the valleys below, merely by the support of the trees against which they reclined. Deep ravines, in various directions, gave an air of still sterner solemnity to the scene. The natural platform to which we had clambered was thickly overgrown with brambles, through which we soon discovered that it would have been impossible to force our way but for the scythe, and Jupiter, by direction of his master, proceeded to clear for us a path to the foot of an enormously tall tulip tree, which stood, with some 8 or 10 oaks, upon the level, and far surpassed them all, and all other trees which I had then ever seen, in the beauty of its foliage and form, in the wide spread of its branches, and in the general majesty of its appearance. When we reached this tree, Legrand turned to Jupiter, and asked him if he thought he could climb it. The old man seemed a little staggered by the question, and for some moments made no reply. At length he approached the huge trunk, walked slowly around it, and examined it with minute attention. When he had completed his scrutiny, he merely said, S. Massa, jump climb any tree he ever see in the life. Head up with you, as soon as possible, for it will soon be too dark to see what we are about. How far must go up, Massa? Inquired Jupiter. Head up the main trunk first, and then I will tell you which way to go and your stop. Take this beetle with you. E bug, Massa will, the ghoul bug. Cried the Negro, drawing back in dismay, hat for must tote the bug way up the tree, dn if I do. If you are afraid, jump, a great big Negro like you, to take hold of a harmless little dead beetle, why you can carry it up by this string, but, if you do not take it up with you in some way, I shall be under the necessity of breaking your head with this shovel. Hat the matter now, Massa? Said jump, evidently shamed into compliance. Always want for to raise fuss with old nigger. Was only funnin' anyhow. Me feared the bug. What I care for the bug. Here he took cautiously hold of the extreme end of the string, and, maintaining the insect as far from his person as circumstances would permit, prepared to ascend the tree. In youth, the tulip tree, or Liriodendron tuliferum, the most magnificent of American foresters, has a trunk peculiarly smooth, and often rises to a great height without lateral branches. But, in its riper age, the bark becomes gnarled and uneven, while many short limbs make their appearance on the stem. Thus the difficulty of ascension, in the present case, lay more in semblance than in reality. Embracing the huge cylinder, as closely as possible, with his arms and knees, seizing with his hands some projections, and resting his naked toes upon others, Jupiter, after one or two narrow escapes from falling, at length wriggled himself into the first great fork, and seemed to consider the whole business as virtually accomplished. The risk of the achievement was, in fact, now over, although the climber was some 60 or 70 feet from the ground. Which way must go now, Massa Will? He asked. Heap up the largest branch, the one on this side, said Legrand. The Negro obeyed him promptly, and apparently with but little trouble, ascending higher and higher, until no glimpse of his squat figure could be obtained through the dense foliage which enveloped it. Presently his voice was heard in a sort of halloo. How much further is got for go? How high up are you? Asked Legrand. Burso fur, replied the Negro, can see the sky through the top of the tree. Ever mind the sky, but attend to what I say. Look down the trunk and count the limbs below you on this side. How many limbs have you passed? Knee, two, three, four, five. I done pass five big limb, Massa, upon this side. And go one limb higher. In a few minutes the voice was heard again, announcing that the seventh limb was attained. Ow, jump! Cried Legrand, evidently much excited. I want you to work your way out upon that limb as far as you can. If you see anything strange, let me know. By this time what little doubt I might have entertained of my poor friend's insanity was put finally at rest. I had no alternative but to conclude him stricken with lunacy, and I became seriously anxious about getting him home. While I was pondering upon what was best to be done, Jupiter's voice was again heard. Us feared for to venter upon this limb very far tis dead limb pretty much all the way. Did you say it was a dead limb, Jupiter? Cried Legrand in a quavering voice. S, Massa, him dead as the door nailed done up for sartin done departed this here life. Had in the name heaven shall I do? Asked Legrand, seemingly in the greatest distress. Dido, said I, glad of an opportunity to interpose a word, why come home, and go to bed. Come now, that's a fine fellow. It's getting late, and, besides, you remember your promise. A biter, cried he, without heeding me in the least, do you hear me? S, Massa Will, hear you ever so plain. Try the wood well, then, with your knife, and see if you think it very rotten. Im rotten, Massa, sure enough, replied the Negro in a few moments, but not so very rotten as mought be. Mought venter out leetle way pon the limb by myself, that's true. Why yourself? What do you mean? I mean the bug. his very heavy bug. Suppose I drop him down fuss, and then the limb won't break with just the weight of one nigger. Ooh, infernal scoundrel, cried Legrand, apparently much relieved. What do you mean by telling me such nonsense as that? As sure as you drop that beetle, I'll break your neck. Look here, Jupiter, do you hear me? S, massa, needn't hollow at poor nigger that style. L, now listen. If you will venture out on the limb as far as you think safe, and not let go the beetle, I'll make you a present of a silver dollar as soon as you get down. Gwine, massa will deed I is, replied the negro very promptly. Us out to the end now. Out to the end. Here fairly screamed Legrand, do you say you? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.